Mr. Charlton, Reel 2. You were just telling me about the British officer who died.
Oh, yes. He was on the stretcher above me, and I think he'd had a very serious back injury because by the time we arrived at the hospital, he was dead.
So this must have been the early part of 1943 that you were...
December, yes. It would be about just about Christmas time, 1941.
Yes, 1941 you were wounded.
December 41. And that was to Caserta Hospital outside Naples.
What happened to you there?
Well, very little, actually. We were in wards of about eight of us, and the only treatment we had, really, was they used to take your bandages off each morning, occasionally to be replaced by damp bandages which had been rewashed, and they had one type of emulsion ointment which was the treatment for everybody, whatever the wounds.
So you were in Italian hands here?
We then were handed over to the Italians, that's right. And there were nuns and medical orderlies there.
Was there any difference in the way in which the Italians treated you from what you'd experienced at the hands of the Germans?
Well, the Italians were rather a defeatist lot. And I remember one of their padres saying to me, when you win the war, I hope you won't take away our beautiful language. But that was later on in Palmer Hospital. But no, they treated you as well as they could, but I think that the Germans were taking most of the food, and we didn't have very nourishing food. It was a bread roll for breakfast with some ersatz coffee, some wishy-washer cabbage soup with a bit of macaroni at lunchtime, and then another roll... a roll of bread in the evening. That was our staple diet. Oh, on a Sunday, we'd get a sliver of meat about the size of an old half crown.
Was there anything else that was said to you by the Italians about the course of the war and what they felt about it?
No, they were generally fairly friendly with us. But they were rather looked down on by everybody. It was the Germans that was the main enemy, but it was the Italians. We had the feeling rather that they regretted that they'd come in on the German side instead of ours.
What did you say when the chap said to you about when you win, we hope you won't take away our beautiful language?
Oh, that was a chap called Don Sereno. He was the padre who we met up with when we moved later from Caserta up to Parma. And he was the Catholic padre, who became quite friendly. I remember he was told us that he had a mother who loved coffee, and I was sometimes the go-between, where I would pass over a tin of coffee to him, and he'd have his vestments wrapped up and inside two or three bottles of Marsala, which we split between us, and he took the coffee home to his mother. But Don Sereno, he was quite a nice chap.
Did he seem to have any grievances against the Allies?
No, they were very friendly, generally. They were rather... The medical orderlies were rather primitive types. Poor devils, I don't think they even had socks with their boots. But generally, they were they behaved pretty well. The rations were, as I've described before, pretty meagre. We did get the odd, I think midday in the evening, one glass of wine. They used to have things like a carboy of wine, and we used to store that up, and about once a month we'd have a bit of a party. But generally, they weren't bad.
How long do you think you might have been in Caserta Hospital?
Caserta would have been from the end of December until about 3 months, March. About March 42, we were transferred from there by train up to Palmer Hospital. And it was up at Palmer when I met up with this chap I told you about, Ken Collins. And we were in the same ward, they were all sergeants or something together. And he was an RAF observer who had been shot down in the Mediterranean.
So you weren't in a hospital at Parma?
At Parma. Parma, we were housed in an old school next door to the military hospital. We could see the gates to the hospital, and this was an old school.
So it was a kind of camp for wounded POWs?
That's right, yes.
Did it have a number or name?
No, it's just known as Ospedale Militare di Parma was the address that our families had. Got an idea, Ken Collins has been back there.
Were there many other wounded POWs in this ospedale?
Oh yes, we were all, in some respects, some without an arm, some without a leg, some with injuries to their body. I remember a senior officer, a chap called Reeves, Colonel Reeves, who had been an army army golf champion. And he always said to us, well, when we get back, see me at the Buffs at Canterbury. But he was very worried. He'd had a shell through his shoulder, and he was worried whether he'd be able to play golf after the war.
So were they all British or of other nationalities?
Other nationalities as well. I remember one Australian, in particular Australian Air Force chap called Cliff Cornell, and he had a most disgusting habit of exposing his leg and knee, and he could waggle his leg bone up and down inside his kneecap. On the strength of that, he got repatriated, eventually back, I think, to the Middle East and then back to Australia, rejoined, and then he was killed in the war against the Japs. Poor chap, poor old Cliff Cornell. There were Cliff Cornell, he was a very, very nice chap. He used to play rugby union on a Saturday and then rugby league on a Sunday. But when he got back to Australia, rejoined the Australian Air Force, and he was killed fighting against the Japs. There were South Africans with us, some Canadians. There was one ward full of Sikhs who had an unpleasant habit when they went to the loo. They didn't use toilet paper, they used water, and they used to chuck the cans of water down into the loo and block the whole drainage system up.
They used to throw the cans in?
Yes, they used to, margarine cans, that came with the Red Cross parcels. They'd fill the cans with water so that when they'd be into the loo, they'd do their ablutions and then chuck the cans down the hole and block the drainage system, which didn't please the the Italians very much. They'd happened about half a dozen times.
So were there hundreds of wounded POWs in this hospital, or just dozens?
I suppose round about 100, I should think, all told. They had something I forgot to tell you at Caserta Hospital. There were one or two wards which were gangrene wards with horrible smell, and they died like flies. And then when we got to Parma, there was a smaller ward, again with gangrene cases, where the chaps didn't survive. They eventually died. It was really lack of medical equipment, I think, really. But we were lucky. We just had clean wounds.
Did you have any contact with civilians apart from Don Serrano?
I can't think that we... Not very much. There was an Italian doctor, but fortunately we had with us a British doctor who was very short of medical equipment, but at least we were able to talk to him. And it was he who told me that if I didn't exercise my leg, I'd have to have it cut off above the knee, I remember. So I then tied up some books with string. I had books from home and used to work my knee and below my knee just to keep it active, so that eventually when I got my tin leg I was able to keep the knee and walk reasonably well with it.
Well, did the tin leg come whilst you were at Parma?
No, there was only one chap called Butler, I think, who was issued with a wooden artificial leg, which I believe was very uncomfortable, but he was the only one who was given an artificial leg. We were on crutches all the time while we were in Italy anyway. Perhaps I better not tell you about my first experience wanting to go to the loo. I'd been... is it all right to put
yes,
it on here?
Yes, put it on, yes.
It's only, I remember, it was about a couple of months after I was in Caserta Hospital. I was fed up with bedpans, so I said, can't I go to the loo? I didn't realise that the type of loo that they had there was rather like a wash basin let into the ground with two things to put your feet on. I put one foot on, the other, then I put the crutches against the wall. The trouble was, when I'd done my business, I hadn't got the strength to get back again, and I fell back into the damn thing. But that was the only time, really. I'd learnt better after that.
Did you realise that there was a possibility of being repatriated?
Well, we hoped that it might happen, because I remember while we were in Caserta, there was one of the chaps known as Tinny Dean. He was a colonel in tanks as well, and he was already in Caserta when we arrived. And he was interviewed, and I imagine a few others, and he was repatriated. I think he had played rugby for England, Tinny Dean. So we hoped that our time would come, and it was up at Parma when we were told that the International Red Cross would be coming to interview us with a view to repatriation.
What was morale like in the hospital at Parma?
Quite good. Well, we used to play bridge about 7 hours a day, right from after breakfast until almost until dark. There wasn't much else to... We did have books sent out from home. I remember I was due to take my final exams when was that? Would have been March 1940, and that went by the board, of course. But while I was a POW, my senior partners were sending out textbooks so that I'd be ready to take exams when I came home, which I did eventually in about January 1944.
So you didn't get people who got very depressed or suicidal?
No, I don't think we did. A few got rather drunk, but in fact, I think one Aussie, he stored up and traded his cigarettes for wine, and he became an alcoholic on his own stored wine out there.
How was he able to store up so much wine?
Well, keeping bottles and stuff under the bed, and then the monthly parties when we all had accumulated quite enough wines. What we did with the wine, you see, was in the Red Cross parcels, there used to be things like currants for making cakes with Bendix, which was a sort of flour, I think. And so we used to put the currants into the wine, store it, so it became a lot more potent.
What was the attitude of the staff to all this use of alcohol?
They treated it as rather a joke. There was one famous nurse there, Sister Katerina, who couldn't speak a word of English. She was known as Cross-Eyed Nell. But Sister Katerina used to come in, wag her finger at us and say, "Sempre ubriachi," always drunk. Which wasn't true, of course.
So it was free and easy?
Yes, it was quite easy. Yes, quite simple, really.
What about your own appearances before the committee to decide on repatriation?
Well, that was all very straightforward. There was the Swiss people came round, of Swiss doctors came round, inspected us, each of us in turn, and eventually we heard whether or not whether it'd be appropriate for us to be repatriated. So that was quite simple. That, try to remember, it would have been about early 1943, January 43, I should think.
Did you have to apply for repatriation?
No. They may have made a list of possible candidates for repatriation, and we eventually heard that the Swiss doctors were coming, and it was all fairly straightforward. A little time afterwards, we heard the list was put up, or we were advised that we would be repatriated sometime.
You were telling me earlier about your gratitude towards the Red Cross for what they did for you.
Well, the Red Cross were wonderful. It was really from Caserta days. There were these oblong boxes of Red Cross parcels with tins of 50 cigarettes, airtight tins, Players' cigarettes, chocolate, half-pound bars of chocolate, currants, and various types of toffees and things. And it was not a regular supply of Red Cross parcels because they didn't always catch up with us. Sometimes you'd have a gap of about a couple of months, but we always shared our Red Cross parcels. I did with my old friend Ken Collins. Sometimes we were without parcels. I remember at Palmer, we'd had a gap without parcels for some time, and we everybody dying for a cigarette, and we were rolling up laurel leaves and making tobacco out of that.
I think after the war you tried to show your gratitude towards the Red Cross.
Oh, after the war, yes. Well, as soon as I was repatriated, my family were living up in London at Lancaster Gate at the time, and I either wrote or phoned the Red Cross people and said, I'm just been repatriated. We're so grateful for all the work and the parcels that you sent out to us. If I could help in any way, and they asked me to attend various dues, functions and so on. First one was in the Albert Hall. There was a concert being given by the, I think, BBC Symphony Orchestra. And in the interval, I had to address them, all the audience there, and tell them what happened and how grateful we were. And from then onwards, I went about seven or eight times to various factories around London. One trip down to, I seem to remember, down to Littlehampton, and went to some of the hospitals around London, when you just gave a chat on what life was like as a prisoner of war and in hospital, which did, I hope, repay the Red Cross in some way.
Now, returning to your repatriation procedure, can you tell me how you actually got home?
Yes, when we'd been told that we were on the list, we were moved from Parma to Lucca, L-U-C-C-A, Lucca Hospital, where everybody congregated to go onto the train from Lucca. We were in Lucca Hospital for about 3 or 4 weeks. And eventually we were put on the train at Lucca, and we had, as far as I can remember, 5 days on the train going across from Lucca through one of the tunnels, I've forgotten which one now, across to the middle of, through the middle of France, which was then occupied by the Germans, and taken on to the Spanish border and transferred trains from there, from the border across Spain to Lisbon. And we had a wonderful day in Lisbon, I remember, entertained by the British colony there, before we went on to the hospital ship, and another 5 days on the ship back to Avonmouth, which is the port we'd left England in 1941.
Was there any luxury provided on the journey?
Not much luxury, I'm afraid. And we'd been so well looked after at Lisbon that I think half of us were on our backs for most of the voyage back. We'd had a wonderful day, a lot of entertainment and booze. But I remember one thing that survived from the desert day. I had a £1 note in my pocket, and some chap came along and said, there are cigarettes at, I think there were 10 shillings a hundred for cigarettes. So I told this chap, well, he could have half my pound note, and so they were the Navy issue players. What were the players?
Navy cut.
Players, Navy. They were the small ones, either players' weights or Will's Woodbines, but they were full-size cigarettes, but it was jolly good getting those on the cheap, especially as we hadn't had many for some time.
Which month did you get back to Britain?
April 1943.
And who received you in Avonmouth?
In Avonmouth, well, we were, there was nobody, I don't think, who received us formally. We went straight on to a hospital train and taken from there, from Avonmouth, to Netley Hospital. Netley Hospital at Southampton. Arrived there during a bombing raid on Southampton, I remember. And we had, well, actually, I don't know how many chaps stayed, how long they stayed there, but I remember well when we got to Netley Hospital, I phoned through to my family. The next morning, my mother had arrived from London and took one look at me and burst into tears and had a word with her. Doctor in charge, and the next day they got me back home in London, where I had I had about a week's leave, and after that I had to report at Roehampton Hospital, where they measured me up for a tin leg, my first one. And I've been attending Roehampton ever since.
Why did your mother burst into tears? Because of your leg?
Well,
did she know about it?
Well, her first she knew I'd lost a leg. I remember well that she said, well, I did pray each night that you might lose a finger or something like that, but I didn't expect you to lose a leg. And at the time, I weighed 7 stone. I'd been, my weight, I think, beginning of the war was about 10.5 stone. And I was down to about 7 stone. Anyway, by the time my mother got me back to London, we were living in, where was it, Queen's Gardens, Lancaster Gate, had a flat there. And my mother cooked, scrounged food and so on, but I'd been used to so little food that I just couldn't eat the food. It took me quite a time to catch up. Are we getting near the end of this? Well, I was in Roehampton Hospital for about a week. They measured me up for the leg, and then there's various fittings, and I was given a month's leave, had to report back to Roehampton eventually in October 43. I was fully discharged from the army and went back to my old firm.